granted the petition?
They have granted review.
They have, okay.
Which is another, I think, complicating factor in terms of the amendment law.
Trying to cut them off at the pass. Cut you off at the pass, is that right?
No, I think they're actually going to clarify some otherwise unfortunate language in the Court of Appeals decision.
Not just going to reverse it, right?
I think there are a couple of additional facts that may be important, though, here.
So what happened was that they felt, what we had was people who wanted to know whether the police had done right by them as victims.
That's correct. They were not satisfied with the results of the investigation and wanted to know why should occur. There are two additional facts I think it's important to have in mind here. One, it was stipulated by the parties that the way the Portland Police Bureau has set up its procedures, the Internal Investigations Unit has no authority to impose any disciplinary sanction on anyone.
Right.
That function is delegated to a different body, a disciplinary committee. The outcome of its investigation, so far as I know, may be to recommend that the disciplinary committee do something, but presumably there can be a number of other outcomes, even if it finds something wrong, such as suggesting changes in procedures
question,
and so on.
Isn't that true with most internal audits? The audits are performed by someone other than the one who imposes discipline.
Right.
I believe that's probably
There's
true.
Recently an audit of the physical plant at the University of Oregon, which was internal and was performed by internal higher education auditors. But discipline would be imposed by the president of that particular institution. So I think that's a common.
The other fact that I think it's important, it ends up being a footnote in this case, but I think it's important in terms of the reason that there is the public policy really is important, and public access to these records can make a difference in how agencies carry out their functions. One of the records, the defendants in this case requested the records of the IIU investigation. They also requested a letter. One of the police officers who was involved in this, in her report, said, and I told these people there's a letter on file from the district attorney that says they won't prosecute, the DA's office won't prosecute any misdemeanor complaints from this location, because there had been a number of disputes between in which the defendants had been involved. They were organizing their fellow tenants. They were quite actively involved and frequently contacted the police about things they thought weren't right where they lived. They also requested a copy of the letter, which was described in the police report, which was not produced, although no exemption was claimed for it. It was not until this matter was litigated that we got into the circuit court, that the city admitted that letter never existed. But the Internal Investigations Unit had not, and that was one of their charges, was this police officer was not being truthful. She said there was a letter, there it is in her written report, and we want a copy of it. And the Internal Investigations Unit simply had, at least apparently, brushed over completely that allegation that she was untruthful, and it was demonstrated in her report of the existence of this letter. And only on request for these documents were they, which again are separate from the Internal Investigations Unit, but anyway, was it discovered that that the letter didn't exist, and the Internal Investigations Unit apparently had not paid attention to it or something. But I think that is a demonstration that there is a need sometimes to have somebody who has an opportunity to take a second look if they think a whitewash has occurred.
Well, let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Let me play devil's advocate. Maybe I'll play Supreme Court Justice here.
Get to practice.
Maybe it'll be Pearl Harbor Day for you one day, too. Where do we draw the line? How do we, as as a legislature, in consideration of the people who work for us or for the public, provide some bar to access from records which can only be used to the detriment of the employee and have no value to the person seeking them and have no public and don't serve the public interest in their disclosure. All of the other cases that weren't this case, where I'm a public employee and I'll give you the kind of thing. I'm in the planning department, and I'm in a county where there's always lots of contests over land use questions, and I'm the planning director. I'm the assistant planning director. And I'm always hammering all these people who come in with all of their stuff seeking exemptions to the plan, the land use plan, which they have no documentation, you know, insufficient documentation, erroneous material, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm always banging them on the head. In fact, I'm doing my best. And these people have got an economic interest that I'm denying under the law. And they are, as a routine matter, coming after me with complaints and seeking investigations of how I'm conducting my business in the planning agency. And I am investigated 2 and 3 times in a year by my superiors, who may, in fact, share some economic interests with these people who are wanting me to get a certain outcome, which I'm not delivering. And this does happen. Now, somebody comes along, one of these complainants has been trying to create a trail of investigations and complaints against me in order to oust me from the planning department, comes along and said, I want to see all this. I want to parade all of this stuff in front of the public. I want the local weekly gazette in this non-home rule county that wants to, you know, put a house on every 10 acres with a septic tank, regardless of the water table. And I want to spread it all out in the public view. And I am a public employee. And I say the only purpose that can be furthered by that is those who have an economic interest in denying me the ability to enforce the law as it's been put down by the legislature and serve their own economic interest. What do you do in that case? Well, how do we protect that person from having all of this stuff laid out? And I can tell you from years and years and years of service on the Environment and Energy and now what's known as the Ag and Natural Resources Committee and as a member of the Statutory Land Use Committee, I can tell you this is the rub is exactly where it comes, where you've got people denying others economic interest under the law. You know that yourself. When the higher the economic interest, the greater the pressure comes to bear. What do we do then?
I would agree with you that is a matter of concern, but I would suggest that I don't think there is a way to differentiate under the public records law between those who have proper motives and those who have improper motives in getting access to the records. If there were a way to draft a test that said if you're only out to get them, you can't have the records, but otherwise you can't. The flip side of it is actually this happens all the time in Portland, I'm sure other major cities. Under the public records law, people can have access to various, you know, reports of patterns of crime. Well, there are a number of companies that sell burglar alarms and other security devices that regularly go down and pay for, get all these sheets. They're doing that for purely economic reasons. Now, some may consider that an abuse of the public records law, but if the solution...
Well, that's different. That's not a disciplinary action. That doesn't go to the competence...
I recognize that, but
qualifications or the actions of an employee.
But it does go to the issue of whether or not you can distinguish between those who permit who use the public records law because of their economic motives versus their other motives. I do not know of a way that you can protect those people. Although I would suggest that under the existing language of the statute, if the existence of complaints and the investigations were made public, and you were exonerated. Then what would be made public is going to be the exoneration. And if, in fact, discipline is imposed under the present, under the statute as it presently exists, the fact of disciplinary action or sanctions taken against you cannot be disclosed.
That's the thing that bothers me, is that we've got it backwards.
Frankly, from the public interest point of view, I think you're probably correct. I think the public probably has a greater interest in knowing about its employees who have been sanctioned than those who have been exonerated.
Exactly.
But I think it does also have an interest in being able to evaluate it for itself, the adequacy of investigations. It's just that I do understand that the need to protect those collectively bargained
Grievance procedures.
Grievance procedures, and which is really what underlies it here. Unfortunately, I think it gives rise to a result that's a little bit backwards in terms of where the stronger public interest is, but I'm not suggesting that that be upset.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, we're going to think about it for a while, but just in that, that is a real problem that I cite in the land use, and in fact, it's giving rise to a urge on behalf of those who, you know, really care about that, to simply have the state administer the land use laws at the county level and administer the plans after they're adopted in order to circumvent this kind of activity going on, which is going on. So, you know, these things go back and forth, and people get chewed up, you know, get ground up between these kinds of interests. The same occurred here.
I understand, and I'm not suggesting in the least that the public records laws with our other laws aren't subject to abuse by some people, but I would say that that may be a price we bear in having as much public access as possible into the affairs of our government.
Also, I want to note for the record that the chair served as counsel to or administrator to the Joint Special Committee on Professional Responsibility in the 1973 session, which created the Oregon Public Records and Open Meetings, Open Records laws, had a long-term interest in them. So I understand that the kind of balancing tests we have to go through have been involved in them from the beginning, and it's always tough to find. I don't think we'll ever come to a stasis where everything is all unbalanced and no one ever comes back to it.
I might add, and I may be doing myself more harm than good, but I would suggest that the language of the bill as it stands actually would not help or have helped in the Portland versus Rice and Rutledge case. I think what happened in that case would still not qualify as a disciplinary proceeding. And I would point out that the Court of Appeals said that really the position that the city of Portland was urging in that case, or the interpretation of the statute they were urging, was for language that would say investigative process, not disciplinary process. Runs into the same problem of whether discipline doesn't involve somehow the recommendation or invoking of sanction. If I might briefly comment on...
Oh, on Senator Cease's amendment. Yes, go ahead.
The public records law requires that public records be made available and be available to be copied by anyone who wants them, assuming they're not subject to an exemption, by paying the actual costs of the copying. Now, I don't know if that is what she's referring to when she refers to the selling of these lists of names, or whether somebody's trying to get a profit involved. But if a public agency has a document that's not otherwise exempt from disclosure that consists of a list of its employees, that's a public record that is subject to being, that the public has, anybody, member of the public has a right to go look at and has a right to get a copy of by paying the actual costs of photocopying. If that's what is, you know, meant by selling, then I think the amendment may have much greater ramifications on the public records law than we otherwise intend. I mean, it might create a situation where an employee has a right absolute privacy or non-disclosure of the fact that that person is an employee of a public agency, and that, I would suggest, goes too far. The public, members of the public, do have a right to know who are the employees of these public agencies.
Yeah, they may not have a right to their commercial purposes for their home address, telephone number, or social security number.
That's correct. I mean, I understand that.
And then start selling mutual funds. Okay. I appreciate you coming on short notice and providing the other half of this argument.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I think I'd like, before they all go home, I think we should hear again from the City of Portland people to give us a compelling reason, if they can, why we should adopt this amendment.
I assume Ms. Haas was quite willing to have that dialogue continue. Good. Thank you. I haven't forgotten you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Shoemaker, the personnel discipline action exemption was the idea of the legislature. It wasn't the City of Portland's. It was an exemption that was added to the ones that Janice Wilson spoke about that already existed in the public records law. It is an exemption which talks about a personnel discipline action. Judge Rossman said, a personnel discipline action means one resulting in the recommendation or imposition of a sanction. I come back to my position that I think that turns the situation, the result of that, in turns the situation upside down. Judge Rossman may very well be correct. He's a judge and I'm not. And that's the way he reads that exemption.
I understand that, but as Janice pointed out, we already have protection in the Act to protect whistleblowers and to protect personal information, which incidentally would probably take care of James Cease's concern, by the way. And if we are to have an exemption from the Public Records Act, which encourages disclosure, we need a compelling reason. So it seems to me you've got the burden to persuade us that there is a compelling reason why the information gathered in an investigation should be released.
If there is a compelling...
Or should not be released, I mean, should not be released.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. If there is a compelling reason, it is that there is a personnel discipline exemption in there right now. And I'm only saying, make the thing logical. Don't let it be turned upside down and say that I'm not sure whether it was the chairman or somebody said, while the investigation is going on, nobody knows what it's going to result in. So what do you do? Is it exempt or is it not? What position do we take under Judge Rossman's interpretation of the statute? What position do we take while the investigation is going on and before we know whether a sanction is imposed or not?
That would permit me, if I may interject, to come at 4:30 every afternoon while the investigation is going on and say, okay, what did you produce today? And may I have a copy of it?
During the investigative process. And I know what Dave Hattrick, who's the district attorney in Multnomah County, who rules on these, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with the public records law. If you're denied your request, if you're a state agency, you go to the attorney general. If you're a local governmental body, you go to the district attorney. Dave Hattrick has been saying to these people, there's an ongoing investigation. Come back and let me know when it's over, or ask again.
Okay, I've certainly heard your explanation. Now we have to deal with it.
We'll take it under advisement. Do you have anything else you want to add?
The other thing,
closing argument.
thank you. This case has been examined. The Rice and Rutledge complaint against the officers has been examined by Internal Investigation Division investigators. They are detectives. It has been examined by the District Attorney's Office. It's been examined by Judge Olson, the trial judge, and now Judge Rossman has looked at the interpretation of it, so that this, it's not as though the Police Bureau investigation is one that's shut up and put away and nobody else looks at it. There are others who look at it. The district attorney and the role of the AG, where a state agency is involved, and in this case, the trial judge looked at it, and also the appellate court judge. He didn't look at the facts, he just looked at the interpretation of the statute, really. But it isn't as though these investigations are closed up and whitewashed. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Ms. Haas. Is there anyone else who wished to testify? I guess that includes you in the back of the room, sir. Okay.
You mean the only person left in the room who hasn't testified?
I know.
Chairman Cairns, members of the committee, for the record, Colleen Haas, Local Government Personnel Institute, representing cities and counties, speaking in support of Senate Bill 834. As some background, you might ask why the employee representatives aren't here. And I did talk with several of the employee representatives today regarding their interest in the bill, their support of the bill, and in all four cases, or three cases that I talked with, there was support of Senate Bill 834. What the bill is looking to do is to provide protection to a public employee. And I think we all agree that when we become public employees, we do not give up all of our rights as individuals, and we would not want that. the employer is often caught, and it's, and it takes a while to get to the city attorney's office or the county counsel's office, but the employer is often caught in trying to interpret the Attorney General open meetings or open records law or open records interpretation of the law. Any clarification that the legislature could give regarding what it meant by personnel action, and the personnel action is normally the whole file, if you will, the whole investigation and file that is then separated from the personnel file and not made available. The question has come up before, and we've received it as a technical assistance in our offices as to what to do with those personnel investigations, and often non-police. When we focused on police because that was the case that, that Portland had, but often non-police. Could be a complaint, it could be a number of things that may be founded or unfounded. And is the employee, by being a public employee, then subjected to that information being available to anyone who wants it to use in any way he or she pleases? The question came up earlier, I think, from Senator Hill as to whether or not the employee would have access to that material, would be able to disclose that material if he or she so desires. I'm not a lawyer, as you all know. My understanding is that anything that is in an employee file, whether it's in a public record or a private personnel file, by exemption, the employee not only has access to, they are required, or you're required to let them know it's there, and also required to let them have a copy of it. So there's, you know, it's the employee has access to her, his or her file, in any case. I guess our concern comes in the balance, and what we would like to do is give the employee whatever protection is available to him or her. And it's very disturbing if some unfounded, I mean, the employer is required to then investigate if a complaint comes forward. I mean, we would be negligent in not doing that. Then to have that investigation used in a negative way against the employee is certainly not our intent, and I know that Senator Cairns gave an example where the employer might be attempting to do just that in a surreptitious way. I don't find that with the employers that I deal with. I've not run into that in any of the employers that I've dealt with. They are very concerned about the information that the employee. That they have on the employee and how they can deal with it. Regarding Senator Cease's amendments, I read them just a few minutes ago. The question regarding addresses comes up all the time in the ways that were discussed this afternoon, in other ways. And our understanding of the Attorney General's recommendations are that that's public record and the employee has no option. The only way that an employee can request that both telephone and address not be included is if that employee then has taken extra efforts to make sure that that information is not available, i.e. an unlisted telephone number, and then that employee lets you know that it's unlisted and it's not to be given out. And certainly there are instances where our employers deal with that a lot, in instances of harassment, those types of things where an ex-spouse would try and get the information on a spouse. And so in those instances, we work very closely with the employee to try and protect his or her privacy and safety, for that matter. So there are, you know, there are a lot of concerns that the employer has regarding the open records that are currently available. I guess that's the concern that I bring to you is that we're often stuck in the middle. We want to do the right thing, but we feel very strongly that a public employee does not give up completely his or her rights when she or he becomes a public employee. And in all honesty, when I've dealt with those situations, the public employee is quite surprised at how much of their file is available to other people. And when I write personnel policies, small employers around the state, most of their personnel policies are changed drastically in that area when I rewrite them, because their personnel policy is normally, if they've written it themselves or wrote it some time ago, addresses the fact that nobody except the employee and supervisor can have access to that file. Well, it's just not so, and they're very upset when they find that out. And so are the employees, frankly.
Okay. Questions? Senator Schumacher?
Question regarding the Jane Cease or Senator Cease amendment. I wonder, would it make sense to include that address, telephone number, and other sort of private information in the personal information exemption, which is absolute?
Mm-hmm.
Then if the employee wants to provide that, that's fine, but short of that, it's protected because it's of no public interest, whereas the identity of the employee, the fact that the person is an employee, seems to me that is public information.
Right.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that makes good sense. You know, the employer feeling that we represent is that that is private information, but the Attorney General has not been able to see it that way. Not that my feeling is he might not have wanted to.
I think a much stronger defense could be made for that position than the other, and that then any, virtually almost any legitimate interest, you know, is this person an employee of that public body? Yes. What's their rate of compensation? $25,000 a year. What's their job classification? Such and such. All of that kind of stuff. You know, anything and everything there is to know about how long have they worked here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of those things. But you don't get their home address and telephone to then go and call them up and saying, aha, you were making $55,000 a year. You're the kind of person I'm after to sell you a mutual fund or whatever.
Yeah,
let's investigate that.
We don't have any problem with that whatsoever.
Better well, sounds like we have some live issues to discuss, and I guess we're going to chew on them and bring it back up for discussion when we come to some conclusions.
Good. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
And I guess we are adjourned. Yeah.